Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. Just got back from Baltimore, and boy, is there a lot to discuss. The Browns' grit, toughness, and determination were on display all day in the 33-31 upset of the Ravens. Not to mention, Deshaun Watson didn't miss a throw in the second half. Here to break it all down, as usual, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's up, Chud?
Scott, happy Victory Monday. And I have to say, I think this is the best Victory Monday of the year. Do you disagree?
Oh no, it's the best. It's the best win probably since 2020, Chud, I think.
Incredible. And if anyone wanted to argue San Francisco, I would say, yeah, that was a great win. But still, again, and I know the Browns were missing players. They were not 100%. They were not full steam ahead. Still an impressive win, no question. Other wins are impressive, but they went to Baltimore. Not many people thought they'd do it. You did. We'll get to that in a minute. Nicely done, by the way. But they beat the Ravens full strength. It's not like they didn't have Lamar or Andrews or they were missing people. They did it on the road, and it's the way they did it, coming back from 14 points at the start of the game, and then more impressive. At the end, trailing 14 points the fourth quarter. That, they showed me something there. You know, I always tell you, I always say you got to show me. They showed me a lot. They are really a tough team, man. You said it best in your intro. They're a tough team.
Yeah, they are. And it's shown up so many times this year, right? We see it. Watson missing four games, and they win two of them. Probably should have won a third. Nick Chubb goes down in week two, the heart and soul of this team. Jack Conklin in week one, the both backup tackles starting, like you alluded to, in Baltimore. And they just keep finding ways, Chubb. And I think when you see it happen that many times, it's not an accident. It's something about this team. And Kevin Stefanski doesn't love the culture. He doesn't love to talk culture. He just says, culture's just people. Well, there's something about this culture, these people, that – allow the Browns to not get discouraged when they fall behind on the second play of the game, or even the first play of the game in Pittsburgh. Not get discouraged when they get down 14-0 and they're trailing 14 by 14 points time and again yesterday in Pittsburgh or in Baltimore, which is a really difficult place to win. I mean, they haven't won many games there since they came back. So I do think it speaks to something bigger than just one game.
Did you think, when they were down 14-0 in the first quarter or in the fourth quarter, especially after the muffed punt, did you believe they were going to come back and win at those points in the game?
No, I mean, I would not have bet on them to win at either time. I thought before the muffed punt, right, they got within seven and they get a stop and you think, okay, here they go. This is their chance. And then it's like, oh, and then you had the two third down penalties on defense that extended that drive. One takes away an interception. It was the right call. But still, it just felt like it's too much. It's too much for them to overcome. You had, you know, and you know how it goes, Chud. We talked about it. I'm working on stories while it's going, right? Like, okay, if they lose, what am I going to get in my early story? And, you know, I try to post it within a couple minutes after the game gets over. And I'm thinking, okay, Odell Beckham Jr., scores a touchdown on a 40-yard slant. Jadeveon Clowney has two sacks. And James Proche II, who is a former Raven, and those guys are former Browns, James Proche II, who's a former Raven, muffs a punt that leads to the back-breaking touchdown. Like, that's how it felt like it was going to set up. And, you know, in the midst of that is the Browns fought hard and they hung around and whatever, but couldn't get it done. So, neither point would I have thought they were going to win. I didn't think it was over 14-0. But I probably, if you caught me at that second after the touchdown following the muff punt, I probably would have told you it was over.
Yeah. We're taping this on Monday evening. That's how excited we are. I don't think we've ever taped on a Monday.
No.
I don't know when you're going to get this up, whether it'll be Monday night or Tuesday, but just so everyone knows when we're taping it. And it's, you know, Scott, one quick point I want to make. And I want to go back to the Seattle game real quick. Mm-hmm. And I sent this out on a tweet last night, and I felt strongly about this on the podcast, if you remember, after they lost that game. And I told everyone, and I think you agreed with me. We talked about this, but it was something I felt really strong about after the game and couldn't wait to talk to you on the podcast, is how tough I thought they were in that game.
Yeah.
And how, even though they lost, remember we told everyone, don't be so down. They're going to beat Arizona. They'll be 5-3. And whether you beat Baltimore or not, but look, I mean, I really think that game showed them a lot. They, not just us. I think it may have shown them. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I like that. I'm glad you brought that up, right? They almost probably should have, but certainly almost won with P.J. Walker. They got off to a terrible start in that game, especially defensively. Like, I think they gave up touchdowns on the first two drives to Seattle, got in a hole, came back where they were in position to win. I do. I think that was big. And all these moments are just building upon each other. And they follow that loss in Seattle with a resounding win against the Cardinals. Now, you can say all you want about how bad the Cardinals are, and they are bad. But it doesn't mean you're going to come back the next week after a really crushing loss against Seattle and play well. And have a shutout and hold the team to 58 yards. Like, it does say something about the team's ability to respond. And I just think about its overall mental toughness to then come back and say, hey, we're going to prove that we are better than that, especially the defense, which gave up that losing touchdown drive in Seattle. So, yeah, I think all of that built up toward what they were able to do yesterday in Baltimore.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations. I mean, you called it. You picked the Browns to win. I didn't really look to see how many media people picked them to win. I'm not sure if you did or not. I know I didn't. I mean, yeah. I picked them to lose, yeah. So we're both 6-3 now. So the Browns are 6-3. You're 6-3. I'm 6-3. Good job, buddy. You called it.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll give a shout-out to Mary Kay. We had a dinner Saturday night with a bunch of the writers, and she thought they were going to win too. So we were on the same thought process there. Both thought they would get a defensive touchdown. I thought it'd be lower scoring than 33-31. Baltimore scores two touchdowns pretty much on turnovers, right? So that if you take those away, you know, it gets them down to 19, which is right where I picked them. It didn't go exactly as I thought. I didn't think the Browns would score 33. You know, I did think they would get a defensive touchdown, which would be necessary. And it turned out to be just to play catch up, but not necessarily because they couldn't move the ball on offense. But yeah, there's just something about it, Chud. I was worried about the tackles. After we taped last week, we didn't know if DeJuan Jones was going to be out, and he was out. So they go back, both backup tackles. But they figured out a way. They weren't, and I just posted some notes about this. They weren't perfect, the tackles, right? Watson was sacked four times, but there's reasons for all the sacks, and Stefanski walked us through them. One was a quick pass, and I don't think the ball got out on time. One was an RPO, so the line's blocking for the run. He blamed himself for a bad third and two call. So I didn't think they were overmatched. James Hudson, the third, and Jared Christian, who played left tackle for Jed Wills, I didn't think they were overmatched, and certainly they played a part in a dominant run game effort, and the Browns ran for 178 yards against a good Ravens defense, a really good Ravens defense, right? The Ravens were number one in points at 13.8, and the Browns scored 33. So that was my one concern, my biggest concern. I thought the defense would play well, and it played pretty well overall. You give up some plays, you give up the long one to OBJ, but Lamar Jackson did not wreck the game. The pass rush didn't wreck the game. Now, it had a chance with the fumble on the strip sack on the last drive, but the Browns recovered. Wyatt Teller jumps on it, and they're able to overcome that and go down and score. So, yeah, I just had a feeling, Chud. I thought I liked where the Browns were mentally. I thought the Ravens were due for a little bit of a clunker / letdown, having won four in a row and been dominant. It's tough to be dominant in this league week in and week out. It's a blind squirrel theory, but I got that one right.
Well, there are many times, though. It's funny. I was watching my wife and daughters, and they get back, and it's 31-30, and they missed the extra point. And my wife was, oh, God, she was screaming and yelling, and she picked the Browns. How about that? We do a family pick. Yeah, her and both my daughters picked the Browns. Now, one of my daughters, she just picks based on things like what state and cities and colors and symbols and logo. Sure. So I don't give her a lot of credit. But the other two, my oldest daughter and my wife, I give a lot of credit to them for picking the Browns to win. And but after they missed the extra point, after the fumble on the punt, it was like you just felt like even though they were coming back, it was like they were just going to blow it, like when they missed the extra point, you know?
Oh, for sure. And that felt like something we'd seen before, right? They bet all the way back, and it's one stupid play or one missed kick, one fumble, one whatever that cost them a game, right? So that certainly went through my head when Hopkins missed it, and especially the fact that he's been automatic, right? So then he misses, you're like, oh, this is how they're going to lose. The kicker that never misses, misses.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting. I talked to Joel Bitonio after the game, and he said, even though he missed it, the whole time we knew we were going to have to score again, is what he said. Meaning, even if he made it, they tied. So the game's not over. You're going to have to go score again. So they had that in their heads anyway. Okay, the game's not over. It's not like that was to win the game. And I like that mentality. I wasn't thinking that. I was like, oh, my gosh, they blew their chance at overtime, right? And he's like, hey, we're going to have to score again anyway. So I think that was the right attitude. It fit in with the attitude from the rest of the game, right? And then I don't know how you felt, Judd, but when they get the ball back, right, they get the stop. Newsom gets the pick six. Then they get a stop. So they only need the 1 point, right? Or Newsom gets a pick six. He misses a PAT. Then they get a stop. Get the ball back, 4:55 left. Like, then I thought they were going to win the game. Like, I started working on my, okay, Browns beat all the odds, blah, blah, blah. They win. And even when it's Hopkins running out there for the 40-yarder, like, obviously, in the back of my head, I knew that he could miss and I would have to shuffle the story. But I felt good that he was going to make it. And I think that's just all the goodwill that he's built up with this unbelievable start to his Browns career.
First of all, that's a great point by Bitonio. That is. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you're still bumming that you're losing the game, but I see what he's saying there. I agree with you 100%. And a big reason is because of what you talked about earlier, which I was going to bring up again, and I'm going to bring it up now. They were just dominating them, running the ball, and they just needed to get into field goal range. And I felt like they just wouldn't have a problem doing that with the way they were able to run the ball. I mean, they dominated them on the ground.
Yeah, they did. And how about that, Chubb? Talk about it. Losing to Chubb, right? Have to get Kareem Hunt kind of off the scrap heap a little bit. You don't have both your tackles. They were bad running the ball in weeks 3 and 4, and they figured something out over the bye week. And I want to talk about Kevin Stefanski later, but you have to give the coaching staff all kinds of credit there. And that's Stefanski, it's coordinator Alex Van Pelt, it's O-line coach Bill Callahan, it's run game coordinator and running backs coach Stump Mitchell. They all play a hand in the design of the run game. I think Callahan's probably number one. Maybe him and Stump, right? Those are the two guys. But they figured something out over the bye, and it was whatever it was. Like, these are our bread and butter plays, or this is what we're doing wrong technique-wise, and I'm sure it's above my head. But they figured it out. Obviously, the linemen are playing better because they missed some one-on-one blocks early in the season. But it's more about the scheme and then trusting it. And they tweaked some things with, you know, how many two tight ends and three tight ends they use. You got Nick Harris as a fullback, right? They go extra linemen sometimes. Just that whole combination has allowed them to run the ball really well since coming out of the bye, and they deserve props for that.
Well, Scott, you know, people can be mad at me who listen to this that I pick Baltimore. That's fine. I'm sure a lot of them who are listening as well, but that's okay.
Right.
But you know what? When we try to be honest, that's what we do. I bring up that Seattle point. They lost the game. I tried to tell everyone to be, you know, positive. What did we say after the Nick Chubb? Listen to this podcast, everybody. What did you and I say? Well, they can still survive even without Nick Chubb. We said that.
Yeah. No, I know. And it's not meant to diminish Nick Chubb, right?
No, right? Not at all.
It's just to talk about how good the run scheme is, how this league is where if there's a replaceable position – that's it, right? Now, they're not doing it with one guy. They're doing it with two or three guys. And that's how they have to do it. And you know, you throw the quarterback in there, so make it three or four guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was as bad as that. As bad as that injury was, you might be able to make a case that it was worse from an emotional standpoint, right? That might sound absurd, but I really do think the guys in the locker room had to get over that. Not that they didn't have to get over on the field, but it almost feels like that was an easier transition. Okay, we can put some guys in here. We're going to have to do some stuff to make up for Nick, but we can do it. Where off the field, it's like, man, we don't have a guy. There's nobody like Nick in the weight room, in the locker room. It's going to take a collective group to kind of replace him, even more so. So, yeah, I mean, that's just the reality of today's NFL. As tough as it sounds, they have been able to do it, which is a credit to them.
Maybe, and I think we mentioned this, and listen to me carefully when I say this, obviously you don't want Nick Chubb hurt, but maybe mentally now that could carry them a lot farther because they're doing it for him.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I think that is I think that's part of this whole motivation, right? Part of it's how close they are. And I wrote about that over the weekend. I hope people get a chance. I like writing that story. Just how tight this group is. And that's a tough thing to put your finger on, right? And you can't quantify that. But when people say it, when players say it unprovoked time and time again, then you start to pay attention. You start to believe, yeah, that's something. How much they like each other, love each other. The bonds that were strengthened and or created at the Greenbrier, right, during the beginning of training camp. They've continued. The chemistry is way better than it was a year ago. And I don't think it's just because they're winning games. I think the chemistry is contributing to the wins. And just real quick for people, I want them to read that story. Obo Okoronkwo, the defensive end they just got in the offseason. I said, hey, give me an example of this, right? Everybody's talking about it. He goes, I got one. During the bye week, he had a photo exhibit in New York. He's a photographer. He had one. And he said, like, five guys from the team during the 1 week off they get a year flew to New York to go to his exhibit. And he said it meant so much to him and was proof that guys care. And if they care off the field. And he said Denzel Ward was one of them. He goes, Denzel doesn't leave his house. So for him to come really meant a lot. And there's plenty of examples like that.
Yeah. I want to get to Deshaun Watson. Before I do that, though, what do you think was the biggest play of the game? I think it's the pick six. I think that just changed everything. I mean, it just almost exemplifies. It's a model of the Browns being able to come back. They get that lucky bounce. And to me, that was the game changer for you.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Because you're down. Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's tough. There were a bunch of big ones, but there wasn't like one, you know, 80-yard run, right? There wasn't a 50-yard touchdown on offense. That was probably the longest play they had, period. I think that took some wind out of Baltimore's sails. It really ignited everybody. Then the Browns come out, the defense comes out and gets another stop after that missed PAT. So, yeah, I would say that. You know, Newsom's fighting through a groin injury. You're playing without Denzel Ward. You know, your Mike Ford Jr.'s got to be out there, and he's, you know, he's signed to be a special teamer. He's out there playing a ton of snaps at corner. So, yeah, I think all that together, I would agree with you. How about that? They get another break off a helmet. Three games in a row, a ball bounces off a helmet. Two of them lead the Browns touchdown.
Yeah, that's a great point. My goodness. All right, let's get to Watson now. He didn't look good in the first half. Then you wondered if he was going to be playing in the second half with the injury, another injury. Before we get to his second half performance and how he played, where are we with the injury?
Yeah, we're still waiting to find out the MRI results. You know, he said after the game that he was going to play against the Steelers regardless, said there's no way he was going to come out against Baltimore. Now, guys say stuff, and then, you know, the MRI could show something different. He was in a boot, you know, walking boot, leaving the stadium. You know, I mean, I don't know. My guess is it's some kind of ankle sprain, right? It's just how bad it is, what degree it is, if it's low or high. You know, I'm thinking he's going to play because of talking to him after the game. But, you know, anytime you get an MRI, it's not great, right? Something's going to be going on there. might slow him down a little bit, might affect him, which would be a shame if, first of all, if he missed time, it'd be a shame because they're really building something. He's put three good quality starts together if you get rid of that Colts game where he only played, you know, the 12 snaps. So you don't want to stop that momentum at all. And, you know, he needs that mobility, so you hope that the ankle's not bad. But, you know, my point is we don't know the final result of it, right? We don't know if he'll be out there Wednesday. We don't know for sure he'll be out there Sunday against the Steelers. I would think he would be, at least Sunday. Maybe he'll be limited in practice. We'll see. We'll see what the MRI says. You know, maybe it's just another adversity that the Browns have to overcome to whatever degree.
Sure. How about his performance in the second half?
Chud, you just couldn't see that coming, could you? I mean, he was 6 for 20 in the first half, right?
You apparently did. You picked him to win.
Yeah. No. You know, like, I should have asked Stefanski that today. Like, what's Watson supposed to do on that pick six? You know, like, the guy's coming right at him, but Njoku's wide open behind him. So, like, is that on the quarterback to – I think it is, but I would like to hear the coach explain it. Even Deshaun talked about it a little bit. He took responsibility for it. But is that just on Watson to figure out a way to get it past the blitzing safety, you know, without getting it tipped up in the air? Or is it just bad luck? You know, do you throw it and hope, you know, if the guy jumps at the right time? I'm kind of curious about those mechanics of it. But – so he has that play he starts off with, right? And then he just didn't seem comfortable. And that's a tough defense to be comfortable against. You got your tackles, like we talked about. There's pressure early. You know, I just felt like he was never comfortable in the pocket. And then he has the ankle thing. You know, Jadeveon Clowney tackles him. He comes up, gets up a little gimpy. He's gimpy again on the sideline. Goes in early at halftime. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And then it was just different in the second half. And he attributed it to – he thought the Browns pressed offensively in the first half, took some shots. Kevin Stefanski disagreed with him. He said he understood what Watson was saying, but, you know, sometimes you got to throw the ball up top. You got to make the corners. You got to run by the corners, make them backpedal, all that kind of stuff. But in the second half, you know, that touchdown drive, the Ravens come out, they get the big touchdown to OBJ, right? And it puts them up 24-9. Then the Browns go on a 17-play, 10-minute drive. And I think that settled everything down, right? It took the ball out of Lamar Jackson's hands. It let the offensive line wear down the Baltimore defense. It just let everybody settle in, including Deshaun Watson, who, you know, complete some passes. Obviously, he didn't miss one in the second half. Complete some passes, and it started to build. And then as the second half went on, he made some big throws. You know, it's a big 17-yarder. On the last drive to Amari Cooper, and it's double coverage, and he zips it in there. So that's a big scramble. I mean, you go 14 for 14, right? He has a scramble touchdown to Elijah Moore. It's Elijah Moore's first touchdown of the year, first touchdown with the Browns. So I thought he settled in. He was more comfortable, more confident. You know, the protection might have gotten better. And he just made the plays that you expect a guy like that to make. But – you know, when you look at the first half, I don't know if there's any any reason to expect him to make them in the second half, but he went out and did it.
Yeah, certainly. What did you think about talking to him after the game? You know, where do you think he's at right now?
Yeah,
mentally.
I think he's in a good spot. It's, you know, I thought he answered questions well. You know, it was a lot of us. Yeah, it was a big moment for me. It's a big moment for the offense. It's a big moment for the team. He realized that. I thought he showed a little bit of behind the curtain after the, you know, human side, right? He said, I said, well, how do you deal with that, you know, the pick six right off the bat? And he said, I'm on the sideline. I'm looking at AVP, like, and he dropped an F-bomb. But he's like, again? Like, it happened again? Like, he couldn't get past that, right? Oh, my gosh, it happened again, just like in Pittsburgh. But he did get past it, right? Like, so he had that moment, the human moment of, oh, my gosh, why is it happening? And then, okay, we got to get past this. And he did. Now, maybe it took a little while. It certainly took a while for the offense to move past it and score touchdowns. They struggle in the red zone. But even that, you know, Njoku drops a ball. They probably should have had a touchdown earlier. But I think it showed some mental toughness from him to get past that. because, again, that's a tough place to play. It's a tough defense to play against, and that's like the worst start you could get off to, right? But he did have the experience of going through it in week two, and the Browns recovered to some degree in that game, and we could say that they should have won that game, right? But I just thought that was impressive, all of it, and I did. I think he handled it well. I think he handled the interview well. I'm still waiting for the, like, him to show all the exuberance, right? You see glimpses of it, but not a ton of smiles, not a ton of – and maybe he's just trying to keep the even keel and, you know, it's one game at a time like his coach wants him to. And, he's, you know, he's showing it on the field. We just haven't seen it in that interview setting, maybe to the degree that I would have expected.
Imagine if they would have lost this game. We've talked about this before, the perspective of a game. You think about it, right? I mean, all of the same things happen in this game, but the Browns ended up winning, right? But if they lose, we're breaking down that pick six. Oh, how does it happen again like the Steelers? We're breaking down, oh, my gosh, of all people, OBJ scores a touchdown. Right. Oh, my gosh, the fumbled punt. Oh, missed extra point, right? You know, perspective.
Oh, no doubt, Chuck. Yeah, I thought about that too. And it's, you know, like now the resilience and the fight and all that stuff, that doesn't go away, right? If they lose, let's say they lose 31-30, right? That if, you know, Hopkins misses a kick or, you know, the strip sack and Teller doesn't recover and they recover and the game's over. All that stuff doesn't go away, but you feel completely different. You can say, hey, they should have had a better backup tackle. Watson's got to protect the ball, right? All those things that are still reality. The focus just shifts on how you look at those. But what would certainly change is the Browns went from being three games and the tiebreaker behind the Ravens, right, to now they're a half game back, or two and a half, whatever it would have been. Now they're a half game back, and if the Ravens lose Thursday night and the Browns win Sunday, the Browns will be in first place in the division.
It's incredible. It really is. And speaking of the division, how often have we talked about that? They need to win in the division. Now they've beaten Cincinnati. They have a chance to beat them again. They've beaten Baltimore. And now they did lose to the Steelers, but they have a chance. So what are they now? 2-2, right?
Yeah, 2-2 with the Steelers Sunday and then at Cincinnati in the finale.
Yeah. So right now you win this week. You're 3-2 in the division. That puts you where you need to be, puts you in a spot to succeed. That's how many years have we seen them go 1-5 in the division or 2-4, right? I mean,
right. Well, Chud, and I said this somewhere earlier. They've never won the AFC North. Like of all the crap stats there are, right? And there's a million of them, right? 95 quarterbacks and all, you know, all those stats. The division was formed in 2002, and they've never won it. And they've really never come close to winning it. You know, the 2 years ago, the playoffs. You know, it's not like they were one. It's not like it came down to the last week and they had a chance to win the division. So, like, it would be a monumental achievement for them to win this division. And it's in front of them. The opportunity is there.
Yeah, it really is. Incredible. Incredible. Hey, Scott, do you remember a game against the Ravens where they knocked them around like they did? They beat them up. And it's kind of been fun to watch the clips and – I know you haven't been able to watch the game broadcast yet, but when you, I don't know if you noticed it live as much, but boy, when you go back and watch it, they knocked them around.
Yeah, there were plenty of examples of that. You know, Chud, I would say overall, no. And I'm thinking of the Cedric Tillman, Jarrellin, Van Noy, you know, on that kind of like cutback block. That was one example of, the Browns trying to announce their presence, right? Mike Ford on the sideline, Mike Ford Jr. on the sideline with Lamar. I thought it was a legal hit, but I think that got Lamar's attention. He throws a pick on the next play, right? So maybe he was rattled a little bit. So I'm with you. That push where they move, the whole pile goes 12 yards, right? Those are all examples of what you're talking about. I don't remember the Browns, I'm not going to say bullying, but I don't remember the Browns like doing that to Baltimore. I think there was a game, I think Freddie went up there in the Browns' role in Baltimore. I think it was when Freddie Kitchens was coach. It was just an anomaly game, right? So you have those every once in a while, but this one felt legit, right? It felt genuine. And I'll tell you what, Elijah Moore said it on Friday. So he got asked about how physical the game would be. He goes, hey, I know they're physical. We're more physical. Now, that's pretty tough to quantify as well, but I believe that the Browns believe that and then think they showed that on Sunday.
Yeah, and by when I say that, I don't mean score. I mean, I know they've beaten them
right.
The scoreboard. I just felt like the way they ran on them and pushed them around and some big hits. I mean, Tillman's hit. How about this? Let's talk injuries now. We talked about Watson. How's Ward doing, and was that a cheap play?
Oh, yeah. I was told today that he's good. I don't know exactly if that means he plays this week, right? We'll have a better idea Wednesday. But the MRI is back, and it's not it doesn't appear to be serious. So that's great news, right? I mean, he's playing at a really high level. They need him as they go forward. The fact that he escaped a concussion is incredibly important. We know his concussion history, and they tested him for it, and he cleared, which is big. And that hit, Chud, I did not see it live. I saw it on Twitter as the game was going on. That was, to me, dirtiest get out. I mean, Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle, comes flying down the field. And first of all, the play's like dead. Like he's, like Denzel's kind of twirling Zay Flowers by his hips. Like it feels like the play's dead. I don't know if the whistle blown or not. And he put the crown of his helmet into the side of Denzel's helmet. Like, it's amazing that it's not a concussion. And I thought it was crazy dirty. I don't know how the refs missed it. I would certainly expect, and I've been wrong about this because the NFL can be funky sometimes, but I certainly expect a big fine for Stanley because they review every play. I'm sure the NFL's on alert of that play. I'd expect a big fine. I asked Stefanski about it today, and I said, do you think that should have been a penalty? And he said, I don't know. We're going to turn it into the league. And to me, that's Stefanski's way of saying yes. Greg Newsom on Twitter said he couldn't believe it was crazy that there wasn't a flag. And I talked to Grant Delpit after the game about it, and he said Anthony Walker Jr. got blindsided on a play too, and there was no call. So he didn't understand any of those.
Yeah. 6-3, tied for the best start since 1999. They've done it two other times. But I don't know, prisoner of the moment, this one feels the best.
Yeah, I would say there's probably a bit of prisoner of the moment there, Chud. But
yeah.
But I think there are also reasons to believe it's sustainable. You flash back to 14. And I love Brian Hoyer, right? But Brian Hoyer's your quarterback. Deshaun Watson, right? You're paying a ton more money. Expectations are higher. It's not a first-year coach like it was in 14. Like this feels like I keep to keep seeing building to. But it does. It feels like there's momentum behind this. Like there's been a progression. 2020, I know Stefanski's first-year coach. That was a weird year, right? COVID season. At the time you thought it was sustainable with Baker, turns out not to be. And especially the way they won. I mean, Stefanski and the guys didn't want to call it a signature win. That's a signature win. Right now, the signature gets erased if you lose six out of the next seven, right? But it certainly feels like a signature win, and it feels like something that will carry them throughout the rest of the season. And I don't want to get too far ahead, Chuck. You know me. I think that's kind of foolish, but this feels like a playoff team to me, right? Like right now, if you ask me, are they going to the playoffs? And I think you've asked me this during this season. I would say yes. Like, I think they're going to the playoffs.
Well, yeah, no, right now for sure. I mean, right? Honestly, it feels like every team in the division is going to go, although I'm surprised the Bengals lost yesterday, aren't you?
Yes.
I did not see that coming. Because we really gave them high praise last week. And, obviously, anything can happen week to week, but that shocked me.
Well, Chud, and, I got utmost respect for the Bengals, and I think they'll probably be fine. But they have, according to some stat I saw today, they have the toughest schedule in the league left, right? So if you're 5-4 in the Bengals, you got to get to at least 10, right? Like, you're not getting in the playoffs without 10, which means they have to go, if my math is right, 5-3 to have a chance. And that's against the best schedule, the toughest schedule in the NFL. So it's not going to be easy for them. They're dealing with some injuries. They're going to Baltimore on Thursday night. Like, if they lose in Baltimore Thursday, It's going to be an uphill climb for Cincinnati to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, good point. One point I will make, though, about the signature thing, I always hate in high school sports whenever you beat a team that has a better record, and then the kids, the fans, they all start going, overrated, you know? Because I always hate that, because then I feel it takes away from your accomplishment, right? So
John, I never thought about that, but that's a great point. I never thought about that. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I mean, seriously, I've never understood why anyone ever does that, to belittle the team you just beat. Yeah. And maybe in this case, this is a little different, but, you know, maybe they don't want to say it's a signature win because they want to act like, hey, we knew we could do this. I mean, why should we make it seem like, you know, we couldn't have done this? I mean, we're the Browns. This is us, you know? This is who we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Plus, you know, Stefanski's got him believing this. And it's not like he's making it up. The 1 week at a time, right? The game in front of us is the biggest game. So you can't call that a signature win and go, okay, now we got to refocus on Pittsburgh, but that's not a signature win, right? Like, it's just, if you're inside the bubble, I completely get the thinking. If you're outside the bubble, I think it's fair to call it a signature win. And just real quick, Judd, I have to, and I know I mentioned it earlier, I think Stefanski's coaching out of his mind. I think he should be a candidate for coach of the year. I think he's done a tremendous job getting through all the difficulties that we've talked about. And he's doing a good job calling plays. You can quibble with ones here and there. I think overall he's done an outstanding job. And I think what really sunk into me as I thought about it on my drive back from Baltimore was you talk to all these guys in the locker room, and they've really started to parrot what Stefanski says. And I think that means they're really listening and absorbing what he wants out of them. So after the game, he goes in the locker room and he says, I told you the team that fought the longest and the hardest would win, or something like that. Myles Garrett had said the same thing to us in his interview, right? Which means it sank in. And he said it, and Stefanski said it all week, right? The team that plays hardest the longest is going to win. And then Garrett says it. You talk about, hey, the biggest game in front of us. I've had 10 guys tell me that this year, right? Unprompted, because Stefanski's drilled it into him. So I think that's a really good sign for his messages landing.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, this is what the Haslams probably envisioned when they hired him and when they went and got Deshaun Watson. I thought about that this morning. I'm like, you know what? This is exactly what they were hoping for when they spent the money for Watson. And let's be honest, he only played a great one half. I mean, imagine if, you know, he could give – I guess what I'm saying is there's so much more you could possibly get out of this guy. We've often wondered and questioned whether we can get that, and I still think we do a little bit, but at least we got a glimpse of it yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, yeah, I'm stopping short of he's back, right? He's completely black, right. Yeah. But there's people making that leap, right? You see the Twitter clips, and there's people like national media making that, right? There's national media making that leap. I do think it's completely fair to say that's what it looked like, right? Like, this is the vision of all of it, right? The roster's deep. The coaching staff gets the best out of the backups, right? Like, all of it. And then the biggest piece of that is your $230 million quarterback leads a game-winning drive and a 14-point comeback in the fourth quarter. Like, yes, that's what it's supposed to look like.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I mean, I wanted to bring this up to you. As much as, you know, after they lost to Seattle, we told everyone to calm down, and we always, you know, on this end, we have to say, you know, don't get overly excited. I caught a radio show this morning where, you know, they were playing the schedule game and they just couldn't see how the Browns were going to lose another game.
I could come up with some ways they lose a game.
Oh, yeah. If they beat Pittsburgh, they can't see how they might lose another game. I mean, let's chill a little on that notion. It's very, you said Baltimore was due for a loss. I mean, it is hard to win week to week in the NFL.
Right. And it's hard to win week to week. It's hard to play at a high level week to week, right? Like, there's few teams that do it. That's why nobody goes undefeated, right? Nobody goes 16-1. Like, it's really hard to do. Having said that, there is a chance to build on it. There's a chance to play well again the week after. And I think the Browns fans going, okay, well, you talked about Baltimore winning all these games. Well, I think Baltimore played at a really high level against the Lions and the Seahawks, right? Those are their two biggest wins in that four-game win streak. The Browns did not play at a high level for that whole game yesterday. You know what I mean? Like, the defense wasn't perfect. The offense wasn't perfect. The special teams weren't perfect. So they overcame a lot. And I think that's the kind of win where you can go into Pittsburgh and go, well, we got a bunch of stuff to clean up. Just think how good we can actually play. You know, so I think it could be. Now, who knows? They could play Pittsburgh and get beat. But I think it could be the best of both worlds. You get this great win, but you're also like, hey, we can play so much better.
Yeah, on the morning show, on our morning show this morning, our executive producer looked up prices, and I think the seats even up high are going for like $200, like the nosebleed way up high, and these tickets are going to be expensive. Scott, it is going to be a wild atmosphere on Sunday in Cleveland when the Steelers come to town. You know,
oh, there's no doubt. If they go back to back, Ravens Steelers wins, right? People are going to go nuts. Like, I started to feel it last night, just from like the reaction on Twitter and social media and people watching the videos of the interviews I'd put out there. Like, it was a higher volume than usual, like by a lot. And I just think you're going to see that. You're going to see the interest continue to jump. And then, it probably jumped exponentially with that win. And then if you back it up with the Steelers win, look out. And that's all people are going to talk about on Thanksgiving, right?
Because all of a sudden
it's Thanksgiving after those two games. They go to Denver. But before then is everybody gets together for Thanksgiving. How is it not all about the Browns?
Yeah. Well, let me offer you this. I'm going to put you on the spot right now because we did not discuss this before we went. Well, I guess we're not live. We're taping this for people.
You and I are live when we're doing this. But yeah.
You and I are live. So what do you think if we finish up just talking about the Baltimore game, we come back on Thursday or Friday and take 10, 15 minutes and do another one to break down the Steelers game? I feel like I feel like my head might explode, and we want to make sure Watson's playing. Here's the bottom line. I think the Steelers game deserves its own preview coming off of this win. It's Monday. Let's let listeners listen to this throughout the week, and then are you cool with that?
I love it.
Good. I put you on the spot. Let's just do that.
Perfect.
All right. Anything else on this win? I mean, I think we broke it down. Is there any other angles that we've missed, or we hit the injuries? Anything from today that you may have gotten from the Stefanski Zoom or anything?
No.
All right.
We hit it, Chug. We hit it. Yeah. And do you, right. Real quick, before we go, do you agree with me on the Stefanski stuff? Like, do you feel like he's doing a whale of a job here?
I do. I just don't, I think we've talked about it before. I can't stand when they lose and fans want them fired. And here's the thing about Stefanski. You just said it about the toughness and drilling it. He coaches the same way pretty much. I feel like the mentality that he has, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't work, you've often said, right, that he's like a guy that likes to pass first before he runs. I mean, right. Haven't you, right?
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, like back when people used to accuse him of not running Nick Chubb enough, what do you want him to do? Carry the ball 35 times? I mean, it just it wasn't practical. So I think in terms of his approach, he pretty much obviously you game plan for different teams different ways, but don't you feel like he kind of has the same mentality each week? So they're 6-3. I mean, he's been coach of the year before. The guy has been. I mean, think about what he's had to go through quarterback-wise throughout his history as the head coach here. I mean, and what he's overcome. And I think it's been pretty impressive. And, I don't know if he's the – I don't know where he ranks as far as coaches in the NFL, but I definitely agree with you. I think he's doing a good job.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would say I do think he has shown a really good ability to adapt there still might be the tendencies, right? All coaches have those. But we thought they were going to go three wide this season and throw the ball all over the field. They're not doing that as much. Now, they had three wides out there, but it feels different. There's also Nick Harris is a fullback. There's James Hudson is an extra lineman, right? There's two tight ends, three tight ends. Like, it feels like he's adapted to the circumstances given the injuries on the line, given the injury at quarterback, given the injuries at running back. I do feel like he's done a good job adjusting, and they have won games in different ways, and I think that's a credit to him.
True, but don't you think that also part of why we thought that, I mean, their receiver room is not that deep.
Correct. Well, that's part of it, right? And I think it all goes back to Watson getting hurt, right? Like, Watson gets hurt, you can't throw it 30 times a game, right? So then you have to adjust. In the meantime, you get rid of Donald Peoples-Jones. Like, I think all of it is combined. But I think that, again, I think that speaks to him, his willingness. Now, his philosophy is the same, and his tendencies are certainly the same. But I do think there's a flexibility to his coaching style.
Sure. And then when they lose on Sunday to Pittsburgh, we can bash them. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't – I'm not saying I think that. That was a joke.
I know.
But – no, I think he's doing a solid job, and let's hope that they can feed off of this and stacking wins, right? How many times have we said that? Let's stack some wins. They have a chance to win three in a row,
right? Which is what you need to do. Like, if you're going to be that team, right, the team that wins the AFC North for the first time, the team that goes to the playoffs, coasts the playoff game, you can't win one, lose one. Like, that's not how it works. You got to win games. You got to stack them. You got to get a winning streak. And they got two in a row. They need to build on that.
Sounds like a plan. Let's do it.
I feel like Bob the Builder, the number of times I said build. I don't know, you get a word in your head and it just bounces around in there.
Oh my gosh. That's great. Yeah. I got to get up at 2:30 AM. So, I got to build a case to get my head checked. What am I doing? Yep. So, yeah. All right. Let's do it. Let's reconvene for about 15 minutes at the end of the week and talk Steelers.
Perfect. Thank you, Chud.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll talk again. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again later in the week. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.